Welcome to the Andrew Tarrington Hitchcock Show on UFOcRadio.com. Returning with me today is Deanna Spingola. Deanna, are you with me?
I am, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming back on to the show. We're going to do something a bit different today. I emailed you about this subject, and it just to let the listeners know. Some years ago, I think it was 2008, Michael Collins Piper, who's sadly no longer with us, but he was an excellent writer, and he was with American Free Press for nearly 30 years, and the Spotlight for that time, which became American Free Press, I believe he joined them in about 1980, wrote a lot of different books, did a lot of radio shows himself. He did a book called My First Days in the White House in 2008. Now, this book, when I saw the title, it gave me ideas to look at what he would do. It was basically his only fiction book, if you like. And so he had been asked by colleagues, I think Willis Carter had said to him and Jim Tucker had said to him, you know, reading from the introduction to the book as I have it, and I went through the book to get the idea for this show. And in turn, he based this book on the book of the same title by Huey Long, earlier last century. So I'm now taking it on to introduce to the guests that I have on to see what they would do if they were in a position where they were president. Of course, we have the elections coming up in America this year, and all of us involved in looking for and finding the truth and conveying the truth to our listeners and our friends, etc., are really motivated by what we feel is wrong and what we would do to put it right. And so I'd like to hand over to you, Deanna, now to see, you just start us off with, you're in a situation where you're now President of the United States, and what are the key problems that you see and what would you do to correct them?
Well, I probably have a different view on this than Mike Piper. I loved Mike Piper. And respected him greatly. We were good friends, and I really do miss him. And one of the first things in your email, he said, destroy all Jewish Holocaust museums and their contents, replace them with museums commemorating true patriots and victims of Jewish persecution. Initially, if you make anything about race, particularly where it concerns the Jews, you are going to be vilified horribly because the several generations are convinced that there was a Holocaust and that the Jews were victimized. And so if that was the first thing that you did, you would have everybody against you. 98% of the population. So I would do things differently, and I have a different take on this based on my areas of interest. And the first, well, I'll just start with my notes. Now, all warfare or resource seizure, either via biological or through artillery, is incredibly profitable. All of it, from the war with Mexico forward, have all been initiated by a false flag operation by the U.S. military and or government, or through intimidation, fear, and false science. And when I'm talking about intimidation, I'm talking about things like the vaccine programs. Now, the first successful Marxist revolution occurred in this country. It was called the Civil War. There had been Marxist revolutions in Europe in 1848-49. They failed miserably. And so about 500,000 Marxists came over to this country, signed up with the Union, and then we had a real successful Marxist revolution between 1861 and 1865. And what it did was that it centralized power into one entity, and that began the dissolution of local power. The states lost their states' rights. It was a gradual process, but that was the beginning of their loss of local power. Then shortly thereafter, you had the 14th Amendment, which gave corporations the same freedoms and status as individuals and made all residents slaves while pretending to just give blacks, the actual slaves who were enslaved in America, equal rights. It was a very, very, very deceptive amendment. So, one of the first things that I would do, of course, would be to get rid of that amendment. I would decentralize the federal government. I would get rid of the Department of Education. And I think that the listeners need to understand that all ABC agencies of the federal government were designed to protect corporations. That includes the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, which has really become a revolving door between the pharmaceutical company and the government. The FDA they approve of just about anything that they are paid to approve of. It doesn't matter whether it's toxic. It doesn't matter what it is. They will approve of it. And so we've got the FDA, and we have the American Medical Association, which is really a labor union for physicians. And this labor union gives physicians it certifies them to kill anyone that they wish to kill, according to the standard of care in this country, and they will not be prosecuted. The only time that a person can file a suit, a malpractice suit against a physician is if that physician did not follow the standard of care. But if you follow the standard of care, and you do exactly what the protocols, what the algorithms show. In other words, if you give a person a medication designed because of their symptoms and they die from it, and nearly 50% of the people who take a medication in this country usually die from that medication. So a physician who gives, who prescribes according to the standard of care cannot be sued for malpractice. The only way that they can be sued is if they did not follow the standard of care. Then you have the American Dental Association and its association with fluoride. You have the Federal Communication Commission, the FCC. And in 1927, the government took over the control of the airways and the public airways. Let's make that public airways. The airways belonged to all of the public. Okay, they did not belong to the government, but the government took control of the airways, and this was done under Herbert Hoover, and this was done when he was Secretary of Commerce in 1927, and I believe that the government now is planning on seizing the public water and then allotting those natural resources to corporations to sell back to the public. I think that's in the process as we speak. Then, of course, you have the NSA, which is the government spying on citizens, which is totally illegal. So I would get rid of the Department of Education. I would get rid of the ABC agencies of the federal government. And I would certainly get rid of the NSA, as I mentioned. Then I would de-collateralize American citizens from the debts that the 530 members of Congress are incurring. Now, American citizens from 1933 forward became collateral for the federal debt. And we need to understand that Congress created the Federal Reserve. Indeed, they did. It was done, and I've covered this in my trilogy. They did this with a full quorum, We often hear, oh, that it was Christmas time, it's the holiday season, so Congress dismissed everybody, and they went home, and then a few people passed the Federal Reserve Act. That is a myth. Congress created the Federal Reserve. They benefit from the Federal Reserve. They get to spend all of this money. They are open to lobbyists. So Congress, I would make certain that Congress demolished the Federal Reserve. Forget auditing the Federal Reserve, which was a Ron Paul kind of a fiasco. They get audited every single solitary year. I would reinstate immigration policy to pre-1965 standards. I would have term limits for Congress. In other words, no lifetime senators. And it used to be that the states selected senators to represent the states' rights. And now senators are elected by popularity. Whoever has the best rhetoric, who promises the most things to the most people, or to people who have their hand out, then they get elected. There would be no lifetime appointments to the Supreme Court. I would set that up so that it would be 2 to 3 years, and I would take away from them the ability. Or what they've been doing, the policy, is that they are creating law. What their job was initially designed was that they would not interpret what the Constitution said to their own for their own objectives, but that they would make certain that the other two branches of the government adhered to the Constitution. I would withdraw from the UN and NATO. Now, there's something else that we need to consider here, is that President Richard Nixon commissioned Kissinger, Henry Kissinger, to direct the compilation of the National Security Council population policy. They completed this project during Ford's presidency. Their efforts resulted in the National Security Study Memorandum, NSSM 200, which they titled Implications of Worldwide Population Growth for U.S. Security and Overseas Interest, dated December 10, 1974. Now, this was just after the Supreme Court okayed abortion, which they did in 1973, which was, well, if you really look at it, it certainly wasn't adhering to the Constitution. So Ford, President Ford, officially adopted it as U.S. policy on November 26, 1975, with Memorandum 314. It is still in effect, as the government has never rescinded its execution of the program against targeted populations. Each succeeding administration implements population policies using its own methodology. Officials declassified and released NSSM 200 on July 3rd, 1989. I would repeal it because it does not really have anything. It has something to do with other countries, but it really has a lot more to do with the people in this country. Every single administration devises its own method and technology to decrease the American population. Now, remember, this was passed in 74 and became policy in 1975. And certainly, when you think of 73 abortion, 74 the actual date of the document, and then the passage as U.S. policy, 1975. Well, now you have to look at what has happened since 1975. Now, under Reagan, which was 1981 to 1989, under Reagan, you had the increased monopolization of the media. There used to be, before he came in, there used to be about 5 major media networks, media companies. It was reduced, and now is about 5. During his administration, immediately after Reagan came in, and I covered this in my book, Sandy Hook, Screening Sandy Hook, Causes and Consequences. Immediately after Reagan came in, he switched things around at the FDA, made it more corporate-friendly, really corporate-friendly. It, up until that point in time, it did a passable job at protecting the citizens. But with Reagan, he switched everything around, and you had the approval of aspartame, which is a neurotoxin, now in over 14,000 foods and 2,000 medications, which is kind of a bad thing. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's just based on what you said there, you've certainly been through a lot of different things, Deanna, which are very interesting. And, yeah, it's very interesting with Reagan, and this is something that I was going to put to you. I've just been making a few notes while we've been talking here. And essentially, there's a lot of claims that George Herbert Walker Bush, old Daddy Bush, as we call him, he was actually a 3-time president. And what I mean by that is when Reagan was shot early in his presidency, and some people would even argue before that because of the power that George Herbert Walker Bush had, he was actually the guy behind the scenes that was calling the shots. And, of course, George Herbert Walker Bush, you can link him all the way back to being involved or even in charge of the CIA in Dallas when JFK was shot. And, you know, when you're involved with the CIA, you've got a hell of a lot of power. And, of course, you've got a lot of people that you can go back to historically and a lot of control. So, essentially, in my opinion, he was a 3-time president, although he was down as vice president under Reagan, he certainly called the shots there. And then, of course, he had his own presidency for one term before Clinton came in. And then when you look at Clinton, and it was supposed to be some, you know, big rivalry between Clinton and between George Herbert Walker Bush when they were fighting for his second term and Clinton's first. And then within a couple of years, they're best of friends. So, sorry, after the Clinton presidency, they go travelling together, etc. And, yeah, so on that basis, you can see that there's no real difference between them. It's just the mantle was passed and he was quite happy to pass it. I was just to recap there, Deanna, what you said about Reagan's with the FDA and that. All I said was basically, I think that George Herbert Walker Bush was pulling the strings in that presidency, especially after Reagan was shot. And there's a lot of claims that he was a 3-time president because Reagan, I mean, even towards the end of his tenure, you could see that he had the start of Alzheimer's there. He didn't really know what he was saying. His wife was prompting him in conferences, etc. So I'll hand back to you with your thoughts on that.
When he came in, he staffed his whole administration with members of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was, remember, an actor. He was a spokesman for General Electric. And he did go along with these things. He was very popular. He got elected because of his popularity. He had been a governor in California. So it wasn't like he was just this pawn. Yes, he was to a certain extent. And of course we do have the Bush crime family. We have the Clinton crime family. And, but anyway, he was in until 1989. And then come up to about 1991, and of course you have Bush, the Bush crime family, as you talked about. We had an increased vaccination schedule, which began in about 1991. And, getting back to aspartame, I would get rid of aspartame, totally. Aspartame, as I said, is a neurotoxin. And remember that allopathic medicine is practiced. It's a for-profit industry. It is not for the care of the patient. The healthcare industry literally does not care. It is a for-profit industry, and this goes back to the Rockefellers and their Flexner Report and the destruction of all natural healing methods and colleges and institutions in the United States and in Canada. Anyway, back up to 1991, you had the increased vaccination schedule planned just in time for the 1990-91 invasion of Iraq. Now, I suggest that this invasion, while it destroyed Iraq, destroyed the infrastructure, destroyed the water supply, they had only 4% of the electricity left after this invasion, that it was a double whammy kind of a thing, where the U.S. government accomplished two things. It was a bio war against the young men in the United States. And for more about that particular thing, we can look to the records of Peter Kawaja, K-A-W-A-J-A. And he had an organization. He had information. He actually had letters that were posted on a website. He had letters from the Department of the Army talking about viruses, intentional viruses, intentional diseases that were going to be injected into the military. Okay. And for more information about that, people may visit agwva.org. And
also, if you look at the Vietnam War, I mean, they even made, I know it was obviously Hollywood films, but a film
Agent
like
Orange, yeah.
Yeah, and things like that they were trying. I mean, we saw the footage of LSD being tried on soldiers in the 1950s, but
sure,
there were stories about them being given experimental drugs that made them more aggressive, and things got out of control out there, and that film, Jacob's Ladder, is even reflecting on that, and they've basically admitted, they say that they don't admit it, but, you know, when the military say they don't admit something, it's pretty much that they are, that these drugs, they actually had a certain name, a drug that they were using on the soldiers to make them more aggressive, which is, you know, a great cause of the post-traumatic stress disorder, which, you know, killed more American soldiers by suicide, etc., after the war than during the war.
Sure. And you also had the soldiers, the military in Vietnam, being sprayed with Monsanto's Agent Orange.
Yeah.
Which also, of course, affected the Vietnamese. I mean, it was just a devastating, long-going kind of situation. And people died years later of cancers. And the children of Vietnam veterans, which I've interviewed on my program, suffer from birth defects. And the other thing, too, and on this page that I suggested that people visit, agwva.org, is that every single American president becomes the CEO of U.S. Arms. U.S. Arms is simply another name for the Pentagon. And he has a letter here. It tells you what U.S. Arms is, but there's a letter from Bill Clinton to the shareholders, employees, and customers of U.S. Arms at this website. So, and then of course you have the AIDS and the Ebola and all these scare things, for instance, AIDS. It's an immune situation where your immune system has been compromised. And it isn't the AIDS, HIV, that kills people. It is the treatment for those things. But anyway, we need to look at vaccines as something that the administration, in conjunction with the CDC, introduces into the population in order to make the population sick, so that they will need care. They will need care. So, of course, I would get rid of this mandatory vaccination schedule. And again, the CDC, it was an ABC agency that protects the government, protects the corporations, and remember that the U.S. government is a corporation. We're not having a presidential election. We are having, they've already decided who's going to be the CEO of the United States Corporation. This whole campaign and all of this stuff and the idea that we actually get to go to the polls and select somebody is a big farce. That is an illusion. It gives us the illusion or the idea that we have some sort of a voice in our government, which is absolutely ridiculous. And I mentioned before the 535 members of Congress, they could go to Congress as, you know, a gym teacher or whatever, who makes a modest salary, and come back as a millionaire. And, you know, whatever else. So, people, the 535 are in it for the money.
And also, Deanna, sorry to jump in there, but I remember hearing a show. No, it's okay. Just hearing a show before about what they actually earn, and it was 100-something thousand, you know, nearly 200,000, I think, at the time, dollars a year a congressman earns. But then they spend millions trying to get the seat. And so why would they spend millions trying to get the seat if that was all they were going to get out of it? And the fact is, it's very similar to politics in the UK, that these politicians make their money out of directorships, and that's all you see on the surface. But then it's, of course, all the bribes that they get under the table that they don't reveal, which is how they shape government policy to give contracts to the people that have given them the money.
Absolutely. And then they invest. For instance, they're the only entity that can declare war and a police action. And so when they are deciding whether or not to have a police action, then they say, okay, let's get our investments together here. And if you look at the investments that members of Congress have made, you will see that where they put their money, and they're making a lot of money in putting, well, they invest in Merck, they invest in companies that produce or manufacture war machines, you know, tanks and all that kind of stuff. They know where to put their money because they're planning the agenda.
Yeah.
So, I would get rid of mandatory vaccine programs. I would outlaw mosquito abatement programs and other toxins such as Roundup, which is made by Monsanto. Okay, the abatement programs, okay, they kill bees. Bees are the little creatures that we depend on to pollinate our fruits and our vegetables. Now, this summer, my husband and I attended a family reunion, and this fella, he's a retired lawyer from California, and very, very intelligent, and he was showing me his garden, and I was very impressed, and then he said, out of the blue, he said, you know, I had the a company come in and spray for mosquitoes earlier this morning, because we were having this thing. It was outside. They had this huge, huge yard. And I said, you mean you had somebody spray for mosquitoes? And he said, yeah. And he said, I said, well, you do know that those abatement programs kills bees. He said, oh, I don't have any bees. He said, my neighbor down the road, he keeps bees, but I don't have any. And I'm thinking, you foolish man, how do you think those vegetables in your garden got pollinated? I mean, these people are, it kills bees. And I made a phone call to the local town where I live about their abatement program. I actually recorded it. And he said that they notify people to close their doors and windows when they go through and spray. And I had, and I think, my gosh. Okay, so if you want us to close our doors and windows, you're not supposed to be spraying around lakes. And I live close to two lakes. There's a lake right across the street from my house. They're not supposed to be spraying around lakes. I mean, this is poison they're spraying. It is killing the bees. We have population, the bee population has decreased by about 50% in this country. These corporations that the government is protecting is poisoning the earth. So I think that we need to return to natural farming, and which brings up the factory farming issue. People would be arrested for treating animals the way that factory farm animals are treated. I got a letter yesterday, and I get a lot of these things. It's from Farm Sanctuary. And, oh gosh. It told a story about Julia, which was a pig. She was pregnant with 16 piglets. She had been beaten. She'd been tortured. She had been burnt with a cattle prod while she was pregnant. And then they dragged her by her ears into a pen where she was to give birth. These poor factory farm animals often never see the light of day. They are treated in the most cruel manner, and it's legal. It's legal. And yet people, if they treated their dog like they treat the factory farm animals, they would be arrested. And yet, throughout America, factory farm animals are tortured, beaten, and kept in the most gruesome manner. Plus, they are given 80% of the antibiotics that are used in this country. So, you have MRSA, you have all these other antibiotic, generated diseases that are now finding their way into, well, if you eat a bunch of meat with a lot of antibiotics in it, it's going to become a part of you. You're going to get sick.
And then you don't know if the meat's got antibiotics in it. So you could be someone who, I mean, like myself, I don't take any prescription drugs or any drugs for that matter. You know, I'd always go down a natural route. But if as you say, 80% of the antibiotics are going there, then when you could be going and getting your organic meat or whatever, but if they've still given that, that's only on where they've been grazing. So essentially, they could still be fed all of that poison and you're still ingesting it.
Right. And you could get something like C. diff, which is caused by antibiotics. 30,000 people a year die from C. diff in this country a year. And these could be people who never take antibiotics, but they're eating meat from the grocery store, which is full of antibiotics. Okay. So yeah. I would encourage a return to natural farming. Now I know that this could not happen overnight, but I would certainly prohibit the cruelty to animals, and I would demand arrest for people who did not, comply with humane treatment of animals. I would also outlaw fluoride in the water supply. And of course, you also have it in toothpaste. And if you swallow toothpaste that has fluoride in it, 22 milligrams of fluoride, you're to call poison control if you swallow it. One glass of tap water contains 0.21 grams of fluoride, and our health authorities say drink 8 glasses a day. So in one instance, just one serving, you call poison control. But if you have 8 servings, no problem. So I would outlaw fluoride, and as of May 2042, of the 50 largest U.S. cities had fluoridation policies. On January 25th, 1945, Grand Rapids, Michigan became the first community in the United States to fluoridate its water supply to prevent tooth decay. Well, it's really, fluoride is, and it became official policy by 1951, and by 1960, it had become widely used in the U.S., reaching about 50 million people. By 2006, 69.2% of the U.S. population on public water systems was receiving fluoridated water, amounting to 61.5% of the total U.S. population. Near the end of 2012, 67.1% of the U.S. population was getting water from community water systems, supplying water that had fluoride at or above recommended levels. So, this is a real big problem. And U.S. regulations for bottled water do not require disclosure of the fluoride content. And we just recently heard about the Flint water situation. Well, the entire country has a water situation, and the water is unsafe to drink. So, of course, I would outlaw fluoride in the water supply system. It is a neurotoxin. It is something that the corporations need to get rid of. And so, well, let's just give it to the population, and it causes bone loss. There are so many physical disabilities that it causes. But hey, all these people will go to the doctor and get prescriptions to take care of those things that fluoride causes, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, this business with the water, I think that certainly it's only been the last sort of, going back 20 years, and I remember finding it funny, and not just myself, that you used to only get like Evian water on the, the shelves, you know? And now there's so many companies making their own water, and the supermarkets are producing their own branded water, etc. And so they're kind of gearing you into that situation where, you know, these elitists, they want to basically have you buy anything. They want you to buy the air you breathe. I mean,
right.
They're moving everyone into this situation whereby we're not going to own anything. We're going to rent everything. And you take your basic thing like your Netflix or something like that, which, you know, I don't have, and I'm sure most of the listeners don't follow this sort of thing.
No, I don't do that either.
No. But the point is, you know, cable, Netflix, the whole idea of it really isn't so much that you get movies and TV shows when you want them. It's they don't want you to own any of those. And there was even that case with Bruce Willis where he made the statement that he was going to leave his daughters his iTunes collection, and then Apple said, no, you can't pass it on. It's not something that can be inherited. It dies with you. And so I think this is where they're getting to, and I'm sorry I'm digressing from the water point, but my point is, they want us just to be, you know, essentially once we retire, it's a case of hurry up and die.
And, we used the theatres beyond retirement.
And the situation they want as well is they want us to be a full commodity for them while we're alive. And initially the idea of being a full commodity was to be basically in a situation where we paid our taxes, etc. But as every year goes on, and certainly every decade, they want more and more out of you and they want to give you less and less. And so...
Yes.
You know, they're now going after the Social Security in America. They've been going after that for a few years, as we know, but they're ramping all that up. The Medicare situation, people who've paid in all their lives are being hammered, and these illegals that are coming over are getting it for nothing. And it's all this sort of system that you're seeing in place, and they have to do it progressively in a stepping stones process. So yeah, that's certainly it's, and this is just another thing. I think they're going to get to a stage to say, look, you know, the water, there's so many people in the country today. Well, they let them in or brought them in, you know, but they won't talk about that. But that's the sort of excuse they'll use. You know, water, it's okay to bathe in. It's okay to cook in because you boil it first, so that'll kill everything. But we don't recommend you drink any of the water, and then suddenly everyone will be buying bottled water. It won't just make these people more money, but it will give them what they want, which is control. And if you can suddenly control water, and then you indoctrinate into the populace the fact that you can't drink the water. You can't drink the water out of the tap. All you can drink is a specially bottled water. A, you don't know what they're going to do to that bottled water. And B, they've got control of that water. And so they say food control is people control. Well, water control is even more people control.
Right.
Because
you need water to live.
Exactly.
You can go without food for a lot longer than you can go without water. And getting back to this Flint water situation, think about what it did to reduce the housing market there. If you owned a house, well, who would want to buy a house in Flint, Michigan? The other thing about the water situation is that GM, and this is according to information from Dr. Jennifer Daniels, GM started noticing that their car parts that they were washing in this new source of water, these parts were corroding. And so they were put back on a better source of water that didn't corrode their automobile parts, while the population were kept on the water supply that was dangerous and corrosive. So remember that the government protects corporations because it is, in fact, the mother corporation.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would get rid of fluoride. The next thing I would do is I would repeal all free trade agreements, and that includes NAFTA. I would arrest the politicians who accommodated such treasonous policies, and there you're looking at the Bush crime family and the Clinton crime family. Now, I was looking up the other night on TV. They had a program. I can't remember the name of the program, but it was about O.J. Simpson and the trial and everything. And they televised the whole thing. Everybody in the country was watching that televised trial that had to do with, well, basically two people that were murdered and the person who did it, which was O.J. Simpson. And what were they doing in the country while they were distracting everybody with this show trial? You got to figure that out. They were doing all kinds of things with the psychiatric industry. They were passing all kinds of free trade agreements. They were doing a lot of really bad things to the population. So I would arrest the people, the Bush crime family, the Clinton crime family. And note, they're both, you know, still in politics. They still want to continue their criminal activities. I would create tariffs for multinational corporations who wish to sell products in the U.S. I would decommission all U.S. military bases in other countries. I would return all U.S. military to the U.S. I would assist them in their battle against vaccine damages. And now, not only do they suffer from vaccine damages, but the U.S. government has also promoted the use of SSRIs, which, well, they cause you, they create suicidality or suicide ideation. And so you have 8,000, at least 8,000 military personnel a year who are committing suicide. And it's destructive for their families because oftentimes when you have a father or a mother who is military personnel on an SSRI, the kids are going to also be on psychiatric drugs. So this is big, and I cover this in my book, Screening Sandy Hook.
Can you give Deanna, just to jump in, can you give the listeners your website so they can actually, and where they go to get your books as well, please, just at this point?
Okay, Spingola.com. That's S as in Sam, P as in Paul, I-N-G-O-L-A.com.
Excellent.
I would make the pharmaceutical companies liable for the health damages that their drugs cause. Right now, they are not liable for anything that their drugs do, whether it causes other illnesses, whether it causes death. They are completely not liable. Now, in 1997, the pharmaceutical companies were given permission to do direct-to-consumer marketing. In other words, they could advertise on TV their drugs. And while they were showing you pretty pictures, and remember that 75% of the population are visionary. In other words, they learn through pictures rather than through hearing or auditorily. They learn best through pictures. And while the commercials are telling you all of the side effects of their dangerous, toxic drugs, they're showing you beautiful pictures of people having fun, of going driving down the road in a convertible with their hair blowing in the wind. If you close your eyes and listen to the side effects, nobody in their right mind would take any of these pharmaceutical drugs. But because they have announced this and have made it public, they're not liable. And you're not going to get a lawyer that is going to prosecute a pharmaceutical company because, well, they're bar attorneys and they're kind of all in bed together. But I would certainly make them liable for the health damages that their drugs cause. I would repeal the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which is commonly called the Affordable Care Act. There are three entities that determine the standard of care. In other words, they decide how a patient is going to be treated for a particular malady. And, okay, I had a Skype message. I didn't know whether it was you.
Okay,
they decide.
I'll just say at this point, the doctors, of course, what people forget is they're licensed to practice medicine, the key word being practice. And so
right.
Any problems that happen, that's how they get away with it, returning to you, Deanna.
Right. So there's three entities that determine the standard of care. Those three entities are the hospitals, the pharmaceutical companies, and the insurance companies. Insurance companies, because everybody is now obligated to buy insurance, people get the idea that that means they will have access to health care. That is not true. It just means that you will be paying for something in advance that you may never use. And the whole idea of insurance is based on fear. For instance, car insurance. I've been paying for car insurance, and it's mandatory. And they're going to make health insurance mandatory also. But car insurance is mandatory. Now, the last time that I got into an accident that required insurance was 1965.
Wow. That's 51 years ago.
Yeah, it is. And I have paid for insurance from that time forward.
Yeah. And insurance
and
as well.
I have not used it. And so has everybody else. I mean, seriously, when you think about it, you think, oh, but what if I get in an accident? Well, if you get in an accident, then you and the person who got into an accident will figure out how much it costs, and you'll get it repaired. Okay, they use the same principle with health insurance. What if I get really sick? Oh, what if I get really sick? The chances are, if you get really sick, your insurance company isn't going to cover what you have anyway. I mean, people have the idea that if they have insurance, that everything is covered. That's not true, because the insurance companies have been more stringent. In fact, there was a movie about this. Oh, gosh, I can't remember who was in it, the name of it. But it was a kid that got cancer, and they... See, insurance companies reject policies reject claims automatically.
Yeah.
You know? So you really don't have access to health care. It's just that the insurance companies are going to be even more wealthy, and they determine what to cover. The pharmaceutical companies now have representatives in the medical schools that are teaching the doctors what drugs to give for a particular thing. And the hospitals, they're there to make money. And they each want to make a certain amount of money. So, I would get rid of the Affordable Care Act, or otherwise known as Obamacare. And keep in mind that it was the Supreme Court that approved of that act. I believe Roberts wrote the paper on that. He wrote the judgment on that. And they call it a tax. Baloney! It's a scam. It is a scam. And I mean, it's absolutely terrible. I would arrest public officials who participate in sex and human trafficking because of their occupation. Now, you think, what in heaven's name is she talking about? There are a lot of children in the social welfare system. In fact, they take children away who probably should have and could have remained in their natural homes. And most of the children in the social welfare system are on psych drugs. It's just automatic. They're on psych drugs. So that particular segment of the population is a big revenue source for the pharmaceutical industry. Another big revenue source, of course, and I already mentioned them, is the military. And another big revenue source is older people in rest homes. Hey, you go to a rest home, you're going to get your flu shot, which has mercury in it. You're going to get psych drugs, I know people who have gone into nursing homes, and they walk in, they're mobile, they're talking with people, they're visiting with other people in the home, and within 3 or 4 weeks, they're in a wheelchair, slobbering all over themselves because of the drugs. And so you have these captive patients in the military. People in the military think that they have to follow every single order. And the government is the highest, the biggest consumer of the psychiatric drug industry. And look at all the vaccines they use. Boy, we are really, really living in a very vulnerable situation. And when you consider all these things, and when you consider the that memorandum, and that it is a policy, and that is NSSM 200, when it was passed and made government policy in 1975, then you need to think, wow, this is really going forward. And think of all the things that have occurred since 1975. The degradation of the water supply. The fluoridation. The aspartame. Mandatory vaccines. Mandatory psych drugs. Mandatory psych screening. And of course they're going to exploit any possibility or any event that would require more screening. Because the goal of the psychiatric drug industry is to have all residents on psych drugs. Not just fluoridation. Fluoridation is bad enough, but they want everybody on psych drugs. So, that is what I would do if I ever went into the White House. But trust me, I won't, because quite obviously I'm too ethical, as are most of the people, most of the residents. You need a certain level of criminal to accept that job. Anybody that gets above local politics in any community is going to is not going to last very long. In fact, I'm cleaning out some drawers, and I received, and this was back in 2005, I was the a precinct chairperson. And it was funny. I was only a chairperson for like 30 days. And this Charles B. Clark, he was the Lyle Township Republican chairman, and he sent a letter to Honorable Kirk Dillard, who is the DuPage County Republican chairman. And I read, "Dear Chairman Dillard, it has come to my attention that Deanna Spingola..." Oops, we're going to, I guess it's the end.
I can turn the music down a little bit if you just want to finish your thought in about... Can you cover this in about 30 seconds?
Yeah, they said, "Please remove this individual as a committeeman because she's..." Well, she said some things bad about the Republican Party and about 9/11 and other things. Well, there went my political career.
Well, thank you so much for explaining to us today, Deanna. They were excellent thoughts, and thank you for all the hard work and research you did into the show. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure both you all and my listeners will as well. And to the listeners, thank you for joining me, and I'll be back with you all soon.